And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Oh, Dave, the campaign, the election campaign is deepening and getting more nasty. But more than that, the case about the Mar-a-Lago raid and Trump's reaction to it and Judge Cannon's reaction to Trump calls into question the real issue of whether you should pay attention on a long-term basis or a short-term basis to what's going on. What is the essence of politics? Is it the day-to-day, or is it pursuing a long-term strategy within which the day-to-day fits?
Well, I believe, and I've been preaching, it's more of the latter, that you have to think long-term. That's my rule number one in my analysis, think long-term.
So if you have to think long-term, sometimes, you look at what the Democrats do in contradistinction to what the Republicans do, and you realize there are two different approaches, because the Democrats as a party, they don't follow your prescription. They think short-term. Whereas the Republicans as a party, whether it's the MAGAites or the predecessors, the so-called adults, the Nixon types, they had a long-term strategy, which they pursued. Nixon's long-term strategy was to weaponize and politicize the courts overtly by saying that, the courts American law had been taken over by creeping permissiveness, that what you needed was strict constructionism. And then Reagan followed up, and that was in the late 60s. And Reagan followed up by talking about that you needed to use original intent. What did the people mean who wrote whatever it is they wrote? That's what you should be guided by. And the Federalist Society paid for all that, trained people in all of that, had scholarships, set up legal institutes, created a whole jurisprudence around original intent. And that now is how the law is understood. And it is the current Supreme Court that is in the vanguard of the right-wing political movement. It's not a court. It's not a judicial movement. It's a political movement, right?
Yeah. I mean, actually, what the Republicans were doing was on two levels. I mean, they were operating as politicians on one level, but they had this background of well-funded infrastructure that was paid for by the billionaire class and the millionaire class, and was operating in many ways both independently and in conjunction with these folks. Independently, as you said, and as I've pointed out over time, I used to call it the think tank strategy, where they funded all of these organizations like the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, Pacific Research Institute, Manhattan Institute, all of these places, and then they developed the ideas, and then they had the actuation, the game plan people like the American Legislative Exchange Council and the state policy networks that went in and actually talked to legislators and did these things. The Democrats weren't doing this stuff, or were doing it very scantily. They didn't have the great depth of this. They just worried about election to election. I can remember going to a meeting in Harrisburg a number of years ago with the state legislators. I was invited by a legislator, and they had to meet their coordinator for the Pennsylvania state legislature. And what happened is, after the election, they let the coordinator go, and they didn't hire another one until the next election cycle came up.
Well, by contrast, the American Legislative Exchange Council had at least three state legislatures, members of the legislature, on their payroll while they were members of the state legislature, constantly, continuously. One of them was the state senator from this area. She was on the payroll of the Koch brothers American Legislative Exchange Council for something like 20 years.
Yeah. Well, in recent weeks, I've been pushing that book, Shadow Network, and it talks about how the billionaires, the Kochs, the DeVosses, the Scaifes, had funded something to coordinate a group just that did planning and coordination with all these other groups. They're, you know, you talk about the courts and the Federalist Society. And that took a long time for them to finally get control of things. But the Republicans have been really dominating the courts for, or at least the Supreme Court, since the Nixon era. But, you know, I've done research into this. The last time, I've said this before, the last time a Democratic president appointed a chief justice was Harry Truman in 1946. When you think about that,
yeah.
And of course Nixon got to when Earl Warren died, who was a Eisenhower appointee,
and a bitter disappointment to the Republicans.
A bitter disappointment to the Republicans, and it was a payoff because of Warren had been double crossed by Richard Nixon with California delegates. Warren was the vice presidential nominee. In 48, thought he would be the presidential nominee in 52. And Nixon turned some of the California delegates against him. He was the governor of California. But anyway, Nixon got to appoint Warren Burger as the chief justice. Now, not all of the appointees Republican appointees turned out to be what they had hoped. He also appointed Harry Blackmun, who I believe was the author of the decision in Roe versus Wade. And, you know, later on, Gerald Ford appointed Bush, the first appointed Souter.
Oh.
He appointed Stevens, Paul Stevens, uh-huh. from the University of Chicago. Things like, you know, so we have those things. But as the Federalist Society grew in importance and grew more and more radical in its approaches to things, they made sure that none of the subsequent judges that were appointed would be disappointments. I mean, to some extent, when Reagan fulfilled the promise and he appointed Sandra Day O'Connor, she was a conservative, a traditional conservative, and she drifted leftward considerably on her term in the court. But most of the rest, you know, the appointment, Bork was a hard right appointee who didn't make it. Douglas Ginsburg was a hard right appointee. If you remember when W tried to appoint Harriet Myers, the Republicans themselves they forced her to be withdrawn because they didn't think she was conservative enough on the court. So, you know, now, and
they also didn't particularly want to have another woman.
Well, that's always a problem for them. Always a problem for them. Of course.
But this court, however it's evolved, and it's evolved in the way that you've described, this court has a strategy. It's a legal strategy. He makes it clear. It's Kavanaugh's strategy. He makes it pretty clear. Gorsuch, they all make it clear. They want to get rid of the administrative state that the New Deal created. They want to get rid of the welfare state. They want to get rid of the Civil Rights Revolution's victories. That's their aim. That's the point of all of their work.
Well, the Republicans have been trying to get rid of the New Deal since the New Deal started.
That's right. But these people are doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, the decision in the environmental protection case, right, which said that the EPA didn't have the right to regulate greenhouse gases. If you extend that to its logical conclusions, that is the end of all agency regulation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that is. And there's another case coming up this term of the court, that one and the independent judiciary. Legislature case, which goes to voting rights.
Right.
It goes to voting rights, and that would radically
goes to
change.
Voting altogether, because extended properly, logically, the legislature could invalidate any election whose results they didn't like.
Sure. And, of course, that's what Doug Mastriano wants to do in Pennsylvania.
And that's what Alito wants to do. That's what Gorsuch wants to do.
Yeah. And, you talk about administrative. Michael Flynn was out there in Arizona recently. Talking about that we should get rid of 90% of the federal agencies. I'm wondering if they want to get rid of FEMA.
Only that, not this month. Not this month.
Yeah, the hypocrisy. They keep reminding us that Governor DeSantis, when he was in the Congress, voted against aid for Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, but that hit New York.
Yeah, of course. That hit New York. Rand Paul the same way. You know, when they had the flooding this time in Kentucky, he didn't demand that any federal aid flowing to that be offset by, other parts of the federal budget so that we didn't increase the budget. No, it's with them, it's always heads we win, tails you lose.
That's right. But, this terrible storm in Florida, which devastated Fort Myers. You look at the pictures, you can't imagine. It looks like bombs, not a rainstorm. There's at least 25 people found dead as I speak right now. And you can attribute all of that to the right wing's thumbing their nose at science. The Fort Myers people, Lee County people in Florida, an interesting name, Lee County, spent years and millions developing an evacuation plan, a very sophisticated evacuation plan to take different things into account. The fact that you can't really know for sure how a storm is going to develop. When the storm came for which the plan was developed, they chucked it. They ignored it. They wouldn't implement it. And they delayed issuing all the instructions that their own plan called for being, made at the times when they were to be made. And by the time they did say evacuate, it was too late to evacuate. DeSantis said they did just exactly the right thing. All of those 25 deaths could be attributed to the passion against science, which we saw in the anti-vax movement, in the anti-mask movement, in all of the maggots' contempt for learning and culture and science, and for the insistence that we should be governed by 18th century rules.
Well, not just that, but it's that it's a hatred of any type of government instruction to do things. We don't want the government telling us what to do, even if it's for our own good.
Yeah.
It's essentially anarchy. I can do whatever I want when I want, and don't try to stop me from doing it.
Because God gave me the right.
God gave me the right.
Yeah.
There's a religious aspect to it.
Yeah.
And the idea of a general public good is out the
window.
It's out the window.
Yeah.
Except when then they need rescuing or the people need rebuilding. Now all of a sudden they want the government aid, but they don't want to acknowledge what comes with that. The idea that you have to have organization, that you have to have taxes to pay for these things, and there's this whole question now about, and it's existed for years, about rebuilding in areas that are this disaster prone. There's nowhere in the United States where you can't have a disaster, but there's certain areas, like barrier islands, for instance, in Florida or North Carolina, where it's really highly questionable as to whether or not you should be rebuilding. should have, or, and it should be left up to the private sector, telling people, okay, we're not going to give you flood insurance. Go out and get it on your own. And insurance companies won't sell, or they'll have just exorbitant rates. And there's going to be some people that'll say, I'll take the chance. But, when people's lives are at stake, you need something more than just ideology.
That's right.
You need action. You know, you need those helicopters to come in and take people off of roofs. Who's going to rebuild the roads?
That's right.
You need infrastructure.
You need infrastructure, but you need political leadership.
Yes.
Because it was political leadership of a right-wing type that produced a political situation that allowed these 25 deaths to be lost for no particular reason. You know? And that, it seems to me, is what Biden should be doing. And he's not doing it. Whatever he may be doing, he's not doing that. If you contrast Biden with, let's say, Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt was confronted by the same type of people with the same type of movement, fighting the same kind of fight. And he took his attitude was not that the Constitution was something that had to be understood as a lawyer's document guided by original intent, but that it was supposed to be a living force, something that expressed the national will about current national needs. And he went on the radio and he had extensive interviews to educate the American people about his view of what the Constitution was, that it was a living document.
He also relished the fight. He would mock the other side. What was that?
Martin, Barton, and Fish.
Yeah, I go over the Hamilton Fish Bridge on I-84 at Poughkeepsie, you know?
Yeah.
Or Newburgh, at Newburgh, to go to New England. It's somewhat ironic that they have someone who was that anti. They named this great bridge after him.
Roosevelt actually did build a new consensus.
Yes.
He started when the NRA, which was the agency that was really at the heart of the New Deal, was declared unconstitutional. He went on an offensive to change the way people should look at the Constitution. And he started that in the late 30s. And by the end of the 30s, fundamentally, he had won the argument. It took him 3 years. It doesn't take forever, but it takes constant, aggressive action from the top, education from the top. Yeah. Biden isn't doing it. He's not doing it.
You also have to understand, though, that there's this, as part of this great right-wing infrastructure, you have a communication system that's been set up.
That the right-wing has set up.
The right-wing has set up. They the Murdoch Empire, with the Wall Street Journal, and Fox. You've had Rush Limbaugh for years and years and years out there. You have these mega corporations. You know, it used to be that most radio stations were locally owned or were small ownership groups. Now you have these, and in that book Shadow Network, Ann Nelson talks about that you have these big radio conglomerates that are right wing that control what shows are going on the air, and even to some extent they control content of things.
Well, I mean even there the Democrats fall behind. Why couldn't the Democrats have created these networks as well? They could have.
They tried
with Air America many years ago, but they, the Clintons tried to organize that, but it was ineptly organized and it never went anywhere. It lasted a couple of years and it disappeared.
Yeah, well, the remnants of that are Rachel Maddow and Al Franken.
And Al Franken, that's right. Franken was the big star. Well, he got himself elected to the Senate. You mean to tell me they couldn't organize a radio network? Of course they could have, had they really put their hearts into it and significant money, but they never did it. I don't know why they didn't do it. I think they didn't do it because they didn't think it was important. But it is important.
communications, you know, where do these people get these ideas? And then we have the internet now and the social networks as well on there. And, you know, to some extent, something came up this week when you talk about Democrats and you talk about Congress. One of the things that is out there, and it affects all three branches of government, are conflicts of interest. And there's been a movement, and there's been an issue about whether or not members of Congress should own individual stocks. And there have been some scandals about that. The senator from North Carolina, who's not running, Barr, was involved in one of those. He was cleared.
Cabinet minister, right?
Yeah, the former senator from that was beaten by Jonathan Ossoff down in Georgia had that problem, and there's a clamor for that kind of a law. And instead, this week, Nancy Pelosi came up with, had the Democrats come up with, a law that has no real teeth in it. And it's still, you know, and it is very, very loose about owning things and blind trust, the same way that Donald Trump supposedly set up a trust for his kids running the business. I mean, it's been highly criticized. Matt Cartwright is on the air with an ad saying, I want a law that just, you know, outright bans things. We have a Supreme Court that doesn't have an ethics code, doesn't have anything about when they should recuse themselves or what kind of investments that they should be able to make. Remember, Clarence Thomas voted on cases in which his wife's political allies were parties. That should never be. That should never be. And I just don't understand it. It would seem that is, to get the moral high ground should be very easy to do. But this goes back to the influence of money.
But there's a lot of these congressmen whose personal interests are directly affected. They don't want to give up their attempt to get rich.
Yeah, and that's...
and that's Democrats and Republicans.
That is the one thing that is bipartisan.
Yeah. Because for these politicians, all politicians,
politics, they haven't paid a price.
But it's an individual activity. You do it because you feel like doing it. You don't do it because you represent a movement. You don't do it because you represent an interest group. You do it because that's what you want to do. And for most of them, they look upon it as their business. It's their shop. You know, it's their little factory.
We have so many of them that are millionaires and have decided to campaign essentially on their own because party structures in a lot of places, including around here, aren't very strong.
Well, and also because the party structure demands that the individual candidate raise a lot of money or they won't support them. That's part of the rules. If you can't, if you're the candidate and you can't raise significant sums for your campaign, you can't expect that the party political action committees are going to give you any money. So who's going to do it? A man who's a working man or a woman who's is a housewife doesn't have the kind of contacts that they're going to be able to raise $1 million, which is what it costs to run in Congress in a big district.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Or you get a Dave McCormick who ran a hedge fund. You don't get too many moms in tennis shoes like Patty Murray being successful these days from starting out.
No. And that's why, when a woman like AOC gets elected to the Congress, she's completely out of place. There's almost nobody like her. She makes the point. I doubt that there's anybody who was ever a waitress for an extended period of time who became a state or who currently is a member of either house of the Congress.
Right.
Well.
Right. Or they have a hard time relating to ordinary people.
That's exactly right. Or the people they consider ordinary are their fellow millionaires.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, Scott Fitzgerald said, the rich are not like you and me. And he was right.
That's it.
So,
or Leona Helmsley, only the little people pay taxes.
Well, there she was right.
Of course. yeah, whether that should be the rule is something else. And again, they're protecting or who's protecting? They're protecting themselves and their own, and their and that goes back to the big money and the infrastructure that was put in place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you see it, for example, in the Fetterman campaign, because Fetterman right. campaigns as a fundamentally campaigns as a worker, right? That's what he claimed. His old gish, he wears a hoodie, he's tattooed, right? He's the average working Joe. He's not Oz, right? He's not Oz.
Right. The man in Gucci loafers.
Exactly. And what is Oz's tactic in campaigning against Fetterman? You know, it's to denigrate him. It's to accuse him of being a supporter of murder. It's an elitist, racist attack on Fetterman. That's Oz's approach to winning. It's interesting because it's so disreputable. It's so inhuman. It's so deeply contrary to what most people who vote Republican need in their own lives. And yet he's going to get away with it. I don't know if he's going to win, but he's going to poll a lot of votes, whether or not he wins.
He's been closing the gap, according to polls. It's down to 2 or 3 points.
That's the margin of error.
That's the margin of error.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. You know, obviously, a lot of these campaigns are run by focus grouping and seeing what clicks with people and what doesn't. And the Republicans were talking about inflation and things, but now Oz's campaign is almost all about crime.
And, well, that's just a code word for Fetterman is racist. Friendly to blacks.
Yeah.
That's what
and
it's all about.
At the beginning of the campaign, they were thinking that Fetterman would have a problem with blacks because of an incident that occurred in Braddock.
Right.
The interesting part is, while Fetterman seems to still resonate with the ordinary Joes in the outlying counties, which make up most of Pennsylvania, I've been told by a Harrisburg insider that he's turned off to some extent with that image, that macho image. Some of the women in the Philadelphia suburb area, that they don't like that image. Now, whether they'll vote for him or not is another thing, particularly on the abortion issue. So,
well, it's quite ironic that the Republicans rely for their support on an outright rapist, Donald Trump. That doesn't seem to bother the Republicans. But that this guy, Fetterman, should, you know, swagger as a tough guy, but not a sexual predator, that seems to bother them. That's weird.
It is weird. And by the way, there just keep more and more incidents this week about women getting the short end of the stick. Judges telling women that their children have to. Custody has to be shared with the abusive male parent. Or there was that one case out in Utah where there were these boudoir photographs, and the judge ordered the woman to turn them over to her ex-husband. Things like that.
This is part of the right-wing judiciary's attempt to impose a Christian nationalist fundamentalist political regime. This is what Mastriano is supporting and stands for. This is it.
Jason Stanley, who's written several books on how propaganda works, how fascism works, he says that the macho, gender, and patriarchy are the top priorities in ideology.
Our top priority is to get into the 30 minutes. We are done.
We'll see you next week. We have a Supreme Court term starting.
Yep.
And wish everybody an easy fast on Yom Kippur.
Okay. And especially a very pleasant breaking of the fast.
Yes. Yes.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.